Mind Feed with Nora Casey on News Talk 106 to 108.
The emigrant Irish, like oil lamps, we put them out the back of our houses, of our minds. We had lights better than, newer than. And then a time came, this time now, we need them.
Welcome back to Mindfeed. You are listening to a woman for whom emigration has borne much success, who has nurtured her Irish identity in the US for nearly 50 years, and she's grown a superstar career both in the Irish and the international film scene. Emmy award-winning actress Fionnuala Flanagan. She's a vast body of work to her name, including television, film and theatre credits. She's an eclectic mix such as The Guard, Waking Ned, The Others, TV's Lost, Brotherhood, three series of Star Trek. She joins me fresh from last night's Irish Film and Television Awards, a previous winner of two IFTAs and a Lifetime Achievement Award in 2011. In the past year, she starred in Irish Catalan co-production Tasting Menu and alongside Pat Short in Life's a Breeze, for which she was nominated at this year's awards. Fionnuala Flanagan, you're very welcome to Mindfeed. Now, you were just narrating that very powerful poem, The Irish Immigrant. I know that's not particularly how you feel, but when you land at Dublin Airport now, is there a magnet here in Ireland? Do you feel you're coming home?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, this is the well, you know. I do feel I'm coming home. And I remember some years ago, there was a wonderful, I came home at Christmas one time, and there was a wonderful sign that Arianta had put up at the airport, and it said, "Welcome home for Christmas." And I thought that that was so moving and certainly touched me very much.
Do you still that? When I was in London myself for 20 years, I used to irritate my husband that I always said, "I'm going home next week," and he'd say, "Well, this is your home here." Do you still feel that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've lived in California now for, 40 years, and I still say, "Oh, well, I'm going home. You know, I'll be at home for 2 weeks, or I'll be at home for 10 days, or something like that." Absolutely.
You grew up, actually, in Dublin, speaking both Irish and English. You talked a lot in the past about your father, Terry. Was he a big influence on you?
Oh, very much so. Actually, my mother had some Irish because she'd worked in the civil service, but she, my father, all he could say was "paw," which used to amuse us all very much. And but they both believed passionately in the idea of, you know, that you should have your own native language. And so, I mean, they believed in the principle of, you know, "tír gan tongue and tír gan anam," you know, a country without a language is a nation without a soul. Mm. And so they wanted us, and they sent us to all Irish schools. And I'm so grateful because it's enriched me, and it's enriched me. It's given me a kind of a solidity about where I belong and where I come from that I think one doesn't have. I mean, lots of Israelis I've spoken to who don't speak Hebrew and never learned it. They, you know, there's a difference if you own your own language. Whether you use it on a daily basis or not doesn't matter.
But when you were going to school, Fionnuala, did, you know, people said, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" Did you always say actress?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, when you're a kid, it varies from day to day. But I think I always wanted to be in the arts, and I think I said I wanted to go into the theatre. But, you know, when I was a kid, I was so terribly shy. If anybody had asked me that, I'm sure I would have mumbled away something and said, like, "I want to be a nurse," or "I don't know," or something. Because I remember my father bought me a watch for my 10th birthday, and I was so appallingly shy then that I didn't wear it. I was afraid someone would ask me the time, and I would have to actually talk to them. You know?
It's hard to believe that you were shy. You know, you're so eloquent and you speak so beautifully and you're so confident now.
Well, you know, I think all actors are shy deep down. I really do. Private, and it doesn't mean that you're not confident about what you do, but I think there is a sort of a reserve within most actors because we spend a lot of time, it's our job to observe, you know, just watching and observing and trying to learn how to recreate what we see.
Fionnuala, so I suppose your versatility is what has shone through everything that you've done, but I want to talk just for a minute about James Joyce. I had a sense when I was reading about you and listening to you talking that you were enthralled to James Joyce a bit. I mean, it was something that almost defined you and gave you a level of seriousness, perhaps, in the industry.
Well, I think it's true to say that having done James Joyce's Women, first of all on stage, and then having made it into a little movie, I think that sort of garnered me a lot of respect in Hollywood. But you can die of terminal respect, you know, you really can. but it got my phone calls answered. But at the same time, it did define me in a certain way because, you know, I went to school in Eccles Street. And as far as I was concerned, I mean, that's where the Blooms lived. I mean, definitely, if someone had asked me, where did they live? I would have pointed out the hall door. So they lived in there. And then also, at home, my father and my mother were great readers, and my father liked to sort of pontificate about anything that he'd read, and that ranged from Bernard Shaw and James Joyce down to the Beano comic books, which he also read. And so he would sit reading the Beano and say, whatever the conversation in the room was, he would say, oh, well, as Joyce said, you know, or Shaw said that, whatever. And so, as a kid, I thought that Joyce and Shaw were people my parents knew. So I never questioned that they didn't know them, that they must have heard them say these things.
And the other thing that is interesting about you, Fionnuala, is you started off sort of almost playing the sort of sex siren and the Molly Bloom and various, you know, wife roles. And then fairly quickly, you did some very powerful matriarchal roles. It's something that you do very well.
Thank you very much. Well, I mean, basically, I'm a character actress. You know, I always have been. Hollywood has never known what to do with character actors or actresses. I mean, if you look at the career, for instance, Sean Penn, who's a friend of mine, and Sean has always been a character actor, but when he was younger, you know, they kept trying to push him into being a leading man, you know, in the mold of the Hollywood leading man, and he is a fine, splendid character actor, and that's what he's good at, and that's where he surfaces. So I think that for me, likewise, I had that, if you will, that strong streak of being a character actress, and I was never going to be, I was never going to be like a slip of a thing who could be, you know, the juvenile lead. And also, as I say, there was not, when I first went to Hollywood, there was not that room for foreign actresses, and I will always be regarded as a foreign actress, and, because I am.
And nonetheless, Fionnuala, I think those roles have actually given you vent to the serious side of your acting career. I want to talk to you about a particular mother role, though, that I think perhaps changed you a bit, and it was in 1996 when you played a mother of one of the prisoners in Some Mother's Son, Terry George and Jim Sheridan's film, and you played opposite Helen Mirren. Did you feel that changed you?
Oh, yes, that was a picture that had a huge influence on me. I even stopped dyeing my hair after that picture, and wanted to find out who I really was underneath all that red dyed hair. And so I just stopped doing that. And
why did you stop doing that?
Well, a variety of vain reasons. I have some friends who are older actresses and who were redheaded originally and then started to dye it as it went grey, which is what was happening to me. I went to see my hairdresser after I finished that film, and I said, you know, I want to find out who I really am underneath all of this, what I really look like. And I said, if you take out all this dye, and she refused. She said, no, your hair will fall out and I'll be blamed. And so I went to somebody else who agreed to do it and cut it very short. And so I went around for a couple of months with kind of pinky orange hair, short pinky orange. And punk hadn't even come in at that point. So then the color that I am now, this kind of white color, is what grew out. So I thought, hello. And people said to me, oh, you'll never work, you know. I mean, it makes you look old, da-da-da-da-da. Well, I haven't stopped working.
Exactly. So, but some mothers, first of all, did you get a chance to speak to the mother that you played in Some Mother's Son?
Actually, no, she was not. She was a combination of several people. Right. I got to speak to several of the mothers of hunger strikers, and they were wonderful to give me the information and to give me, to confide in me and to be kind enough to tell me what it was like, etc. So that was useful. But the whole reason that picture is one of my favorite pieces of work and one of my favorite films, because it was a picture about something that matters, about a watershed in our history, that it matters, and we're still today, even in the North, feeling the fallout from those dreadful days and the death that happened around that. And so I think that what Jim Sheridan and Terry did in writing it was that they addressed something that nobody else had been able to do. And I had seen maybe four or five scripts had been sent to me about focusing on the hunger strike, but they were all set inside the prison. Whereas the real story of how it tore the community apart was set among the families. Mm. And I think that that was their brilliance, that they chose to focus on the two mothers and by extension on the families and what was going on.
And I don't think you were around in the 70s for some of the worst.
No, I wasn't. I mean, I visited, but I wasn't around. I mean, I wasn't living here. I did know what was going on because I would come to Ireland and I'd be in Dublin and I'd say to people, what's happening in the North? Say, oh, don't talk to me about the North. I'm so fed up listening about the North. I don't want to hear. I wish it would all fall into the sea. I mean, that was the reaction for the most part. Or people would say, oh, isn't it dreadful? Isn't it terrible? But the reaction was people really didn't want to get involved. You know, I mean, that was significantly the reaction. And apart from Sinn Féin, which was always there to address the peace process, and without them, that would never have happened.
I was going to ask you about that because you actually became very political as a result of that movie, and you threw open your doors, yourself and your husband Garrett, to Gerry Adams once he got the visa from Bill Clinton, and you supported Martin McGuinness in the presidential campaign.
Yes. Well, we threw open our doors when they initiated the peace process. Mm. That was why he came to America to spread the word about that and try and get support for it. And that's when we threw open our doors and have spoken endlessly about furthering the peace process. And I think, as I say, I think that without the Sinn Féin and Gerry, that would not have happened. I always thought that it was a total disgrace that the Peace Prize, the Nobel Peace Prize, that it did not include him, because it just simply would not have happened without them.
Do you think they should have accepted it without him?
No, I don't think they should have accepted it without him. But then, you know, who am I to say who should accept a prize?
I know you supported Martin McGuinness for the presidency. Were you disappointed that he didn't get the presidency? And I suppose also last night at the IFTAs, you know, Michael D. Higgins was celebrated. So, you know, what's your sense of his time?
I'm glad Martin didn't get it. And I think Martin is glad, too, that he didn't get it, because it would have been a dreadful loss to the job he does in the North, which he does magnificently and walks a very fine line. I supported him because I thought, at the time, as I said, that he was young, he was vitally, and certainly had the experience of working in, you know, shark-infested pools, if you will, as a politician, and I thought he was very good at it. But even then, I did think, well, you know, it would be a shame if he had to leave what he's doing, and it would have been a great loss to Sinn Féin, too, I think. So I thought that from that point of view, I thought the choice of Michael D. Higgins was wonderful. And I think he is a brilliant man. I think he's been a superb president. He was gracious enough to give me my Lifetime Achievement Award and be kind, even though he knew, of course, that I hadn't endorsed him. But, you know, that didn't matter. He rises above that, and his presidency has done so much for the image of Ireland, and not just for Ireland. The way he has spoken out about human rights and human dignity and the cause of the arts and the cause of film in Ireland. But for him, we would not have an Irish film board. We would not have a young, fledgling Irish film industry, which is advancing by leaps and bounds and gaining international recognition now.
So, Fionnuala, I suppose at this stage your mantelpiece must be groaning with the amount of awards you have, but great to get a nomination at the IFTAs, and I suppose it's one of those landmark events that you always seem to return home to.
Yes, I do like to come to it. It's always a great night, and it's a wonderful thing to be nominated. And nominated in such distinguished company. Those women, you know, were just, you know, wonderful, and congratulations to the winner. Well deserved. It's always a wonderful night, and I like to come and support as I can, you know, our Irish film industry.
Yeah. Fionnuala Flanagan, thanks for joining us on Mindfeed, and the best of luck for the rest of your stay in Ireland.
Thank you very much.